Okay, Rabosai, let's get started. We're going to work today, Emirtz Hashem, on the Sugyan Daf Kuvav according to the Trumas Hadeshim. That's what our goal is for today. The Sugya establishes that according to Rabbi Yehuda, in the cases of Chovel Umavir, you're only Chayev if it's a Meleches Tikkun. And in the case of Mila, the Gemara says the reason why it would have been prohibited on Shabbos is because there's a tikkun, and that's called tikkun mila in the Gemara's language. So that's a constructive accomplishment. In the case of Srefa, of Havara, of Mavir, in the case of Bas Koin Shezinsa, there the Gemara says that you have a tikkun of Bishul Psila. If you recall, they used to heat up the lead and turn it into some sort of a liquid substance and pour it down her throat. That's how they implemented the death penalty of Srefa. And in both cases, Rabbi Yehuda argues that's called Tikkun. Now please note that there seems to be a fundamental difference between the two descriptions of Tikkun, or the two answers to the question why Mila would be Asur and why Havara, burning in the case of the Psila, would be Asur. As far as Mila being Asur, the Gemara calls that a Tikkun, and Rashi calls it a Tikkun Gavra, meaning that once a person is circumcised, their status is improved. In the case of Srefas Bas Kohen, the Gemara has an entirely different interpretation. There's no tikkun in terms of the improvement of someone's status, but rather there's a preparation of this lead, as it were, converting it into a liquid in order to implement the death penalty. It's a totally different type of tikkun. And perhaps we could ask the question and just put it in the back burners. L'chora, the Gemara could have said the same thing in both cases of Mavir and Chovel, that in both cases, whether it's Mila or Srefas Bas Kohen, we're fulfilling a mitzvah. The mitzvah itself makes it into a tikkun. And who remembers where we saw that the mitzvah makes it into a tikkun? No, in the Gemara itself, I don't know if you were here, David, for this Gemara. Who remembers? There was a Gemara where we said that the mitzvah itself makes it into a tikkun.
Kriya.
That was the Gemara on Kufayim and Beis. And there the Gemara says that if you rip your clothes to fulfill the mitzvah of Kriya on Shabbos, that's called the Meleches Korea B'tikkun. And why is it a tikkun? Because the Tzorach Mitzvah makes it into a tikkun. The Gemara logically could have applied the same yardstick here to the cases of Mila and Mavir. Certainly in the case of Mavir, the Gemara doesn't whisper a word about mitzvah. Tosis is the one who introduces mitzvah. The Rashba introduces mitzvah. And in the case of Mila, Rashi says that the Gemara introduces a concept called Tikkun Gavra. And it doesn't introduce the concept of mitzvah. And that's an issue that we'll have to address as to why in the case of Kriya we have a concept of tikkun through mitzvah, but in these cases of Mila and Mavir and Srefas Bas Kohen, the concept of tikkun mitzvah doesn't seem to appear in the Gemara itself. Maybe the Rishonim want to add it, but it's an add-on. It's not in the Gemara. Yeah, Ben?
Could one not argue that there's a tikkun gavra for the Bat Kohen? Because death is kafara, and she did bidui, and she's actually elevating by going through death and having the death penalty
meted
out against her.
Can we close the door there? So Ben is asking the following question. If there's a concept called Tikkun Gavra with regard to Mila, could there be a Tikkun Gavra as far as a woman who's put to death and presumably that death will bring her a kapara? So I would say the following, that in a sense, Tikkun Gavra has to be something that benefits a person in this world, not in the next world.
Okay.
In the case of Mila, Tikkun Gavra means that this person now could enter into all sorts of dimensions of Klal Yisrael. As we mentioned earlier, they could eat Kachim, and they could eat Truma if they're a Kohenim, and they could be allowed to partake of the Korban Pesach. These are definite and, shall I say, palpable or touchable improvements or benefits that's a result of Tikkun Gavra. You can't say the same thing in the case of Srefas Bas Kohen. She doesn't have any tangible benefits from it. Now, the Trumas HaDeshen is not a commentary on the Gemara, let me not fool you about that, but in the course of his analysis or his response to a question that was raised to him, a halachic question, because the goal and the role of the Trumas HaDeshen is what we call a meshiv. A meshiv means one who responds to questions. And he writes the Trumas of the Trumas HaDeshen, in this case to answer a question about Mila B'Shabbos, but we're using the Trumas HaDeshen as a method to shed a light on the sugya itself. In other words, there will be parts of our learning, you know, as we go along, where we'll read a tshuva just simply to know what the halacha is. Because again, as I told you at the outset, we're learning both Masechta Shabbos and Hilcha Shabbos, so we're going to try to coordinate that. But in this particular case, we're not interested so much in the issue at stake and the final psak and the ruling in that issue. We're more interested in the Trumas HaDeshen shedding a light on the shakal of Atarya, the give and take in the Gemara itself. So first, what was the question that was presented to the Trumas HaDeshen? He wanted to know, in a case of Mila B'Shabbos, so we have a halacha of Bayom HaShmini Afilu B'Shabbos, then on the eighth day, even if it coincides with Shabbos, we will fulfill the mitzvah of Mila. Who should do the Mila? The father is offering his, you know, he's volunteering his services as a Moel. It's not clear whether he has that much experience or not. That's another dimension of this question. Do we want to give Mila over to someone who has very limited experience? And we have the option of someone else doing the Mila. Now, if all things were equal, who would be first choice? Who would get first dibs, so to speak? The father, yeah, because he's the one who's obligated in the mitzvah. Now, it's true he can appoint someone to implement that obligation, but rather than do so, he would rather do it himself. But apparently, the one who raised this question, we don't have his name, it's an anonymous questioner, he assumes that for some reason, since the other person might be more experienced with Mila, although that per se maybe would not be enough to tip the scale and have the father forfeit his opportunity to do the Mila, the fact that the father is less experienced than Acher means the other guy, nevertheless, he still thinks that in this case of Mila B'Shabbos, because again, he doesn't ask this question about Mila during the week. You know, you could always ask the question from Sunday to Friday on a Mila, who should do the Mila? If the father is less experienced than the Moel is called an Uman, that means he's an old pro at Mila, he has a great deal of experience, maybe that question should be raised. Apparently in that context, the Shoel would admit that the father still gets first rights for the Mila, because it's his mitzvah. He doesn't have to forfeit that mitzvah, simply because Ploni Almoni, the Acher, is more experienced than he does. But for some reason on Shabbos, there's a more of a pressing reason to... Right, we have the Mar Makomas pages here, Harvey, on the page. It's just on the table. You please help yourself. In the case of Shabbos, there's more of a pressing reason to appoint the Acher to implement the Mila as opposed to the father. And in his opening line, the Trumas HaDeshen says that your question is very complex. It's not an easy question. Tzarech dig du gadol, he says. We really meticulously analyze this question. And he kicks off the analysis by quoting the Tur, who was, by the way, the first of the Rishonim to codify the halacha after the Rambam had done so. The Rambam codifies it in one particular fashion, and the Tur in another fashion, a totally different approach to how to codify the halacha. And if we have time, not now, we can have a long discussion about that.
Yeah, why were there two streams?
Yeah, so that's a whole... You know, I don't want to get off on a tangent because our time is limited, but please, Tzvi, bug me on that, because there's a fundamental difference between the way the Rambam codified the halacha and the way the Torah did. The tour, by the way, is the predecessor or the precursor of the Shulchan Aruch. In fact, the tour already divided up halach into four parts, four sections. The part that we're learning today is from Yoredeya. And Yoredeya is chock full of all the halachas that apply on an occasional basis, meaning they're not part of the general calendar, because there's another section in the four sections of Shulchan Aruch that's dedicated to the calendar. Which one is that? Anybody remember? That's called Aruch Chaim, right? Aruch Chaim. But in Yoredeya, things that come up occasionally from time to time, they are codified in Yoredeya. So if Mila is something that's occasional, it's not built into the calendar, it doesn't have a definite date, that's included in Yoredeya. So the tour in Yoredeya has a codification of the laws of Mila, Bris Mila. And there he quotes Rabbi Lazar al-Levi. And this, it's not clear whether his name is Rabbi Eliezer or Rabbi Lazar. We might call him by both names, because apparently there are two different traditions as to which person this was. So we might call him Rabbi Eliezer. He's quoted by the tour as saying that we will not prefer the father, as in fact we're going to prefer the acher. Someone else should do the milah in the case of milah b'shabbos, unless we have no choice. If there's no one else available to do the milah except for the father, then the father, as a fallback position, will implement the milah. But if all things are equal, we have other options, then we should honor someone else with milah, not the father himself. And he offers a very, how shall I say, ambiguous or complex explanation as to why he is of the opinion that we should give preference to Acher rather than the father. And he writes, you might want to underline these words, because what I'm going to do throughout this Trumas Hadeshen is I'm going to highlight certain words. Most of what I tell you will be outside, will be Torah Shebal Peh, will be oral Torah. But at certain points, I will ask you to underline the text so that when you review this on your own, you'll know where to put the emphasis. Dehamila hi psik reisha legabei. Okay, then, so you want to, that's about, I would say, about the fourth line down. And Mila, you know what, maybe, Svi, I can bother you for a copy. I'm using the, this copy. So just so that we could. So if you have a pen, you'll see that on line two of the main paragraph, Tshuva, the underlying paragraph, towards the end of line two, if you underline the words, Dohamila hi psik reisha legabe. Okay then? Now, what this means, does anybody here know what psik reisha is? That's a complicated concept, yeah?
It's chicken. After you shaft the chicken, it runs around. But it's not.
But what's going to definitely happen?
It's going to
die, right? The chicken can't live without a head. It can run around for a while, but it's not going to. It's eventually going to die. So that's called psik reisha, which means if I know for certain that some malacha, some violation of Shabbos is going to definitely happen. Let's say, for example, you're not allowed to make indentations into the soft ground. That's called charitzim. So let's say I'm carrying a very heavy, I'm dragging a very heavy chair or couch on the soft ground. I know that the legs of the chair, by virtue of the weight, are going to make these indentations in the ground. That's called a psik reisha. That means it's definitely going to happen.
From an action?
In other words, I'm really involved in one action. Let's say, for example, I'm transporting the chairs or the couches from one place to the other. I'm not interested in making holes in the ground. But I definitely know, given the two variables here, namely the softness of the ground and the heavy weight of the chair or the couch, that it's definitely going to make these indentations in the ground. That's called psik reisha. Okay then, so psik reisha is a definite repercussion or result. That's the word I want to use. It's a definite, if a definite result of his action, that's called psik resha. So here we have a problem because the moleches chovel by circumcising the baby and removing its dam. Remember what we said, that chovel means removing dam from a living being. That is a definite, meaning there's no question in anyone's mind that certainly this incision, right, this circumcision is going to cause Meleches Chovel to happen. Does everybody see that? There's no way you can circumcise the baby without the blood coming out, because it's an incision into the body. So you remove a membrane, and that membrane therefore exposes the blood, and the blood comes out. That's called Meleches Chovel. And that's a psik resha, because that's definitely going to happen. You can't fool yourself into thinking that on the one hand you're going to circumcise the baby, on the other hand no blood is going to come out. So the argument here of Rabbi Eliezer Alevi, quoted by the Tur, is that since it's going to definitely happen, then he cannot deny that he has intention for this to happen. Okay, so let's perhaps write down the following three premises here. Let's look at that. Okay, so premise number one is that Mila equals Chavola. Chavola means you're drawing blood, which is Meleches Chovel, correct? And let's say number two, if you would ask the question about Kavana, meaning, does he have kavana for this chavola? Well, the answer is apparently yes, he has kavana, right? The answer to kavana is yes. And why does he have kavana? That's because of a principle called psik resha. So you can say, well, I'm not interested in making charitzim in the ground. You can say that if you don't know whether you'll make charitzim in the ground, because maybe the couch is not heavy enough, maybe the ground is not soft enough. But if it's a psik resha, and given all the scientific data, we can definitely predict with all absolute certainty that you're going to make these charitzim, that's considered like you had kavana. So basically, the purpose or the goal of psik resha is to create kavana. And it's sort of like this delusion. Is that a good word? Delusion. The person is deluding himself to thinking, well, I don't have any intention for this. You can't say you don't have any intention if you know up front it's definitely going to happen. That's called psik resha. So in order to undermine or destroy, take the wind out of the balloon, so to speak, puncture the balloon, about his saying, well, I'm not miskaven, we have this mechanism called psik resha. The mechanism of psik resha is to create out of an eno miskaven into a miskaven. Okay, so if you follow my writing, I don't know if you'll follow this, he's an eno miskaven, but eno miskaven. This is supposed to be above here. Eno miskaven. And the purpose of psik resha is to change the eno miskaven into a miskaven. Now, at this point, Rabbi Eliezer claims in the Tur that there's a fundamental difference between the Av, the father who's doing the Mila, and the Acher who's doing the Mila. And he wants to suggest that in the case of the Av, the Psik Resha is going to convert an Eno Miskaven into a Miskaven. But in the case of the Acher, the Psik Resha is not going to do that. Why? Because, and this is premise number three, Kavana, or Miskaven, has a precondition, and that is what I call benefit. How do you spell benefit? B-E-N-E-F-I-T. Did I get that right? Okay. You have to have a benefit. You have to have some vested interest in order to call someone a miskaven. So even though psik resha, in a sense, plays this mechanical role to convert an eno miskaven into a miskaven, but there's a condition, and it's contingent on the fact that he gets some sort of benefit from it. And here we get to the fourth premise, and this is the most complicated premise of Rabbi Eliezer, that as far as the Av is concerned, he gets a benefit. Okay, so we can check this off. But as far as an Acher is concerned, someone other than the father, he has no benefit. And exactly why this distinction is correct, or what the logic behind this is, that's going to be the subject of this Trumas Hadeshen. And the Trumas Hadeshen is going to try to work into a pshat in our Sugyan Kuf Vav to try to explain why the Av, the father, gets a benefit, but the Acher doesn't get a benefit. Okay then? And this is going to be a major breakthrough here if we can figure this out. Any questions up to date? Okay, I take that to mean, yeah.
Then what happened? Then I guess it will come up. But then you get into the argument between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon again.
Well, at this point, we're going to assume that Rabbi Yehuda is the shita that we're accepting. I mean, that's going to be again a major point in this Trumas Hadeshen. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, we need some sort of benefit from Chovel in order to make that into a malacha. In the case of the father, since the father gets benefit, again, that's the premise of the Rabbi Eliezer Halevi, since the father gets benefit, therefore we have a bona fide maleches chovel b'tikun. B'tikun means, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you need a tikun, otherwise it's a makalkel. And where is this tikun? This tikun is the benefit that the father gets, whatever that is. We don't know what that benefit is yet. We're going to try to discuss this. And therefore, with regard to Mila on Shabbos, Tzvi, I'll be right with you, we have a serious problem of maleches chovel. Why? Because if the father does the Mila and he gets benefit from it, and it's a psikresha, he can't claim, well, I wasn't miscavving to draw the blood. What do you mean you aren't miscavving to draw the blood? You know that the blood is going to come out. That makes it into a miscavving. But now we can add the condition, well, did the father get any benefit from it? And the answer is, yes, he got benefit from it. Did the Acher, if he implemented the Mila, did he get any benefit? And the Trumas Hadeshen is going to suggest that according to Rabbi Eliezer Halevi, the answer is no. The Acher did not get any benefit from it.
But the father gets benefit because
I'm afraid to answer that question. Why? Because that's again this whole long presentation of the Trumas Hadeshen.
Okay.
So there are two ways we can go here, Don. I can either give you the background, or we could go through the Trumas Hadeshen the way he presents it. I don't know. I'm not sure which way is the better way to go.
But at this point, we're saying that it's better to use a moel on Shabbat to do it.
Correct. And the reason for that is since the moel gets no benefit from this mila, because it's not his son, then it becomes a maleches kilkul without that element of tikkun. What makes it into a tikkun is the fact that he gets benefit. That makes it into a maleches chovel. Again, this is all according to Rabbi Yehuda, as Don points out very well, because Rabbi Yehuda is the one who says that you only chayv for chovel if you upgrade it to a maleches tikkun and you get some benefit from the chovel. And the father in this case is going to get benefit from the chovel, so we have a serious problem.
Yes, but why did you get any benefit from it?
Yeah, so that we're going to get into as we go along. There are going to be a number of possible answers to that question. And once we answer why the father gets benefit, we automatically have to flip the other side and ask why the Acher doesn't get that benefit. So you wanted to say something before.
That was exactly my question.
Right. So whatever that benefit is, which right now, you know, that's the... Do you remember those programs on television where you had to guess what's behind the curtain? What's that called?
Let's Make a Deal.
Let's Make a Deal. Excellent. So in Let's Make a Deal, there's something called a benefit that's behind the curtain, and you have to guess what that benefit is. And that's what the Trumas Hadeshen is going to try to explain.
According to Rabbi Shimon, it's no problem. This doesn't even become a makalochet in Rabbi Shimon's, because it's a kilkel from the get-go.
So again, what would be Rabbi Shimon's answer to the question of the questioner here as to who should do the mila?
It doesn't matter.
Exactly, it doesn't matter. Because according to Rabbi Shimon, either way you have a maleches kilkel. We have to hope that he does this mila in the perfect way without drawing any extra blood, and in that case, the small amount of blood that he draws in this mila is a mitzvah of mila. And whether it's the father or it's acher, there's always going to be a mitzvah of mila. There's no hair's breadth of a difference, according to Rabbi Shimon, between the av and the acher, because Rabbi Shimon holds that chavola is a malacha. If it's a malacha in and of itself, I don't need any tikkun, I don't need any tzorech, I don't need any benefits. Even if it's pure makalkel, I'm chayav for chovel, so that you don't benefit anything by introducing the acher. What are you going to tell the acher gets no benefit from it? But Rabbi Shimon doesn't require a benefit, so the whole discussion is moot. That's an excellent point. So again, moving a little bit further in the Trumas HaDeshen, he quotes now a Mordechai. The Mordechai was one of the Ashkenazic, you know, the German Rishonim way back, you know, like 1,000 years ago almost. And he writes to Mordechai in the name of various other Rishonim that if the father had never implemented Mila in his life, this is his first experience of Mila, then for sure we have to worry about the probability or the possibility that he won't do the Mila in the proper way, and it's now Shabbos, and if the Mila is not done in the proper way, then there's a Chilul Shabbos. Because again, the only heter is exactly, you know, if you cut too much or too deep or whatever the case may be. I don't know, for this we have to learn Hilchas Mila, so don't ask me about Mila, because I'm not a bucky in Hilchas Mila. That would require a whole nother 6-month program in Hilchas Mila. But let's say if he doesn't do the Mila properly and now he draws blood and it's outside of or beyond the pale of Mitzvah Mila, he's already fulfilled the Mitzvah Mila, now he's still drawing extra blood, so above and beyond the health issues that are involved, you also have a Shabbos issue involved, because the Torah allowed Mila on Shabbos only insofar as he's involved in a Mitzvah Mila. Once he goes beyond that, he's crossed all the, I don't want to call it the red lines, because that sounds like a pun, but you know, if he goes too far with the Mila, at that point, he's drawing blood illegitimately, so to speak, and there's no heter, there's no permission here based on Shabbos. And since this father has zero Zippo experience in Mila, we have to really consider a serious possibility that he won't do the Mila precisely the way the Mila is supposed to be. And if he cuts a little bit too long or too far, he's going to be drawing blood, and there's no mitzvah Mila on that drawing blood. And it turns out, therefore, that there's a Chil Shabbos. So we see, the Trumas HaDeshen is pointing out, we see in the Mordechai a very similar approach to that of the Torah in the name of Rabbi Elazar Levi. In both cases, we have to worry about the possibility that extra blood will be drawn, and there's no heter on Shabbos to draw that extra blood, and there might be a violation, therefore, of mitzvahs, excuse me, of what? Of Meleches Chovel. Again, let's point out here that there is a difference between Rabbi Eliezer HaLevi and the Mordechai. Rabbi Eliezer HaLevi introduces a whole new concept here called Psik Resha, and he emphasizes within the context of Psik Resha that there's a difference between the father and the Acher, because the father definitely is miskaven, he gets benefit from this Mila when he circumcises his own son. In contrast, the Acher doesn't get that benefit, so therefore Psik Resha does not undermine that original claim that I'm not miskaven, and it remains an Ein miskaven, and there is no Malacha, so that we have to introduce the distinction here between the Av and the Acher. And then after presenting the Mordechai, the Trumas HaDeshen says, "Vani shamati b'derech Shmua b'yechem yagdolim." He doesn't tell you who he heard this from, but he has some sort of tradition from one of the great scholars. His here liavia ben shemol kvar kamapomim shlo yovel b'shabbos, that even if the father has some sort of experience in Shabbos, nevertheless, it's better, it's preferable to introduce someone else into the equation, to let someone else do the Mila. And that tradition, in the name of Echad Me'agdolim that the Trumas HaDeshen received, apparently reflects and supports the position of Rabbi Elazar HaLevi again that we started with in the tour, that even if the father does have some limited experience in Mila, nevertheless he should be appointing someone else to do the Mila. And again, all this is because of the possibility that the Mila will not be done properly. Now at this point, we're going to fast forward to Omnam Nireh. And that is the underline towards the end of your page. And at this point, in the development, in the presentation, the Truma Sadeshin is going to try to justify the conclusion of Rabbi Eliezer Alevi and the distinction between the Avia Ben and Acher. And he says the following, that Rabbi Eliezer Alevi in the Torah holds like Rabbi Yehuda that Mekalkel Bechabura is Potter. Yes. Nu, if Mekalkel Bechabura is Potter, then why, says Rabbi Yehuda, do I need a special license, a special permission to implement this meal on Shabbos? In any event, there's no Meleches Mekalkel. And the answer is, based on Rav Ashi, if you recall the sugya inside, that Mila is considered a tikkun. And why? Because of tikkun gavra. So you'll notice here that the Trumas HaDeshen, in explaining and defending Rabbi Eliezer Alevi, has the text of tikkun gavra. I don't have that text in my Gemara. I have tikkun Mila, but where do I have the words tikkun gavra?
In Rashi.
So that the Trumas HaDeshen now either is quoting Rashi or maybe had a different text in the Gemara, I'm not sure, it's not clear to me. But the tikkun is tikkun gavra. So now we can come back, Don, to your original question. And the let's make a deal. What's behind the curtain? What is the benefit that we're talking about? That's called tikkun gavra, which means the change in status of the child from that of an orel, who's not circumcised, to that of a mahul, who now can eat kodshim, he can enter into the Beis HaMikdash, he can partake in the Korban Pesach. All these benefits are called tikkun gavra. Notice once again, and this we're going to change this in just a minute, but right at this point in the development, what other tikkun is not being mentioned? I always point this out to you. Which is the tikkun that's omitted? The tikkun that we had in the case of Korea Al-Mesa. What tikkun is that?
Mitzvah.
That's not mentioned at this point. We'll have it in just a minute, so you can hold your breath. But right now he's talking about tikkun gavra. We were very meticulous when we read Rashi, and we said that Rashi deliberately omits any mention of tikkun mitzvah. Mitzvah doesn't appear in Rashi. We looked for it with a word search. We didn't find it. And then we're going to have to come to grips why Rashi omits tikkun mitzvah, which the Gemara has back on Daf Kufayim and Beis in the case of Korea al-Meso. That remains an outstanding problem, which I hope we'll get to today, Mitzvah Hashem. But the tikkun that we're talking about is tikkun gavra. And the language of Rav Ashi now becomes Mali Litakin Gavra, Mali Litakin Kli, or Mana he has. Mana is Aramaic for Kli, a utensil. So just like if I fix up a utensil, that's called a Moleches Tikkun. So too, if I improve the status of the baby who's now, as a result of Mila Mohul, that Tikkun Gavra is also a Moleches Tikkun, converts the Molech of Chovel from a Meleches Kilkul into a Meleches Tikkun. Now again, we still haven't raised the following question. If the benefit here and the Tikkun is Tikkun Gavra, why do we single out the father as opposed to someone else? The Acher. We're about to get to that. But then he writes the following. Umuchach Hasam.
Where are you?
Yeah, in the lines that start with Omnam, we're on line 3. Now you'll see in brackets he has Umochiach. When he does that, and this is taken from Bar Ilan, what he wants to tell you is that there's another text. Let me just see what text I have here. Just one second. Umochiach. I also have Umochiach. So if you can sort of indicate in your own way, you choose how you want to do that the correct text there should be Umochiach, which makes it into a an active verb. Umochiach hasam atosvis, and Tosis there proves lepirish Rashi that according to Rashi, ein hatam. The reason for Mila being a tikkun, ein hatam de Mila chashiv tikkun mishum kiyum mitzvah. Tosis proves that the tam is not, according to Rashi, kiyum mitzvah, but rather the reason is tikkun gav. Now again, you might argue that Rashi was avoiding tikkun mitzvah here, right? Because in the case of Sreifas Bas Kohen, the Gemara doesn't mention anything about tikkun mitzvah. In the case of Sreifas Bas Kohen, the Gemara mentions the tikkun on the psila, you know, that piece of lead, if you remember, that we heat up in order to implement the death penalty. That is called a tikkun. No mention of tikkun mitzvah. So Rashi thinks that the sugya has rejected the concept of tikkun mitzvah, therefore Rashi substitutes tikkun gavra for tikkun mitzvah. D.M. Cain says Rashi, meaning we're explaining Rashi now, if indeed kiyum mitzvah would make a meleches kilkul into a meleches tikkun, ma hayitzarch lefareish, why would the Gemara have to explain in the case of Sreifas Bas Kohen, Hodekomar Nami Hossam, there also in the Gemara in Shabbos Kuvav, Mali Bishal Psila, She'eno Makalkel Sa'evrel Mitakin Vitzoref, that he improves the lead, again, only in the context of Sreifas Bas Kohen, but for our purposes and to achieve our goal, he improves the lead. Why didn't the Gemara just simply say that the tikkun here is to fulfill the mitzvah that's incumbent upon Bezdin and mete out the death penalty, the capital punishment for this capital crime? Why did the Gemara completely sideswipe and avoid tikkun mitzvah? Apparently, El Al Karchach Sava Rashi, therefore Rashi was compelled to come to the conclusion, Dimishum Hachi, therefore, Chashiva Mila Tikkun, Mishum Dal Yidei Kach, Nasa HaTinok Yisrael Sholeh, because through the Mila, the Tinok, the baby, becomes a full-fledged member of the Jewish people, which means that for all Dinim, we include him. He can be included in Karban Pesach, he can be included in all Karbanos, he can enter into the Beis HaMikdash, etc., etc. This makes him into a Yisrael Sholeh. And again, you might ask, has this concept of Yisrael Sholem, is it physical, is it biological? Again, it's a result of Mila, but this change in status is a legal change in status, halachic change in status, and it's not a tikkun in the physical universe, because on the contrary, the Mila itself weakens the child in the physical universe, and therefore it's a meleches kilkul. But rather, Havi Kimo, and here's where the Trumas Hadeshah wants to support Rashi, Hamemayit Anovim Shel Hadas, it's like the case where he removes the berries from the Hadas in order that the Hadas should now be kosher l'mitzvaso. So this is not a tikkun in the biological universe. It's fine to keep these berries on the Hadas, but if you remove them, now the Hadas becomes kosher, it qualifies for the mitzvah of Dalet Minim, of Lulav and Sukkah. So Chashiv Tikkun Mana, the Gemara says in the third parak of Masechta Sukkah that this is considered a tikkun, even though again it's not a biological tikkun. It's not that the hadas is better, you know, is functioning in a better way than it did before you removed the berries, but now it's valid. It qualifies for what? For the mitzvah of Dalet Minim. Because it's possible. Again, you have to always ask, where's the majority? Are there more leaves or are there more berries? If there are more berries, it's possible. So now what you have to do is you have to pluck off the berries to make sure that there's a greater percentage of leaves than berries. And by doing so, you violate Meleches Yontif. It's a tikkun kli. On a physical level, it has no impact whatsoever, neither up nor down, as far, you know, removing the berries. Ella, what's the point of taking off the berries? Al yidei kach, in this way, miskasha alula, the lula becomes kosher. And here too, the tinok through mila becomes kosher for all the mitzvahs that we mentioned before. And now the Trumas HaDeshen is ready to address the following question. So what's the difference in between the father who's implementing the mila, and for him it's a meleches tikkun because of the tikkun gavra of the child, right? That halachic upgrade of the child's status, that now the child qualifies for every mitzvah in the Torah, as opposed to Acher, who does not have this meleches tikkun, and therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda, for the Acher, the kilkul here remains a chovel that's a makalkel without any benefit, and therefore if there's no tikkun, it's not a violation of Shabbos, so let's give the honors to somebody else to implement the mila. And he says the Trumas HaDeshen lefizeh, what's the logic of Rashi? Ha'av vadai komachavin letachinis b'no. You certainly would assume that the father, insofar as he has a special responsibility towards the status of his child, and this, by the way, is a whole sugya masechta kedushin, all the obligations of a father vis-a-vis his child to make sure that he is, you know, is able to be a perfect, you know, to qualify for all the mitzvahs. That's his obligation as a father. Kedeshiyei nikra shalem, so the child now through the mila would be considered shalem. So the father definitely has a kavana for this benefit of transforming the status of his child from that of a Arel to that of a Mahul, which means to give him the shlemus, the perfection of Tikkun Gavra. And at this point, it's a psik reisha legabei. We know for sure that when the father implements the Mila, le'inyan Tikkun Gavra, he's going to definitely, without a shadow of a doubt, engender this improvement on in the status of his child. The afal gav the ikar kavana lemitzvah v'chel chiyuva. In other words, when the father, you know, is motivated and intends to implement his obligation to circumcise his son, what should be his motivating factor? When you do a mitzvah, what should motivate you to do the mitzvah? Like the mitzvah, right? We shouldn't be motivated by benefits from the mitzvah. But nevertheless, as far as kavana is concerned, not in the sense of kavanas mitzvah. In kavanas mitzvah, you want to know what motivates him to do the mitzvah. But as far as kavana and Shabbos is concerned, you want to know what benefits he gets from it. So he's definitely going to get he's going to have a kavana to benefit by the fact that his son is now experiencing a transformation, a tikkun gavra, right? What Kafka would call a metamorphosis, right? He says, "Aval acher lo ichpas le betikun legabei leinyan tikun gavra." Says the Trumas HaDeshen, if the tikun behind that curtain is the tikun of gavra, the way Rashi insists, disqualifying tikun mitzvah, then there's a fundamental distinction between the father and Acher. The father is motivated and benefits from the fact that this Tikkun Gavra, he's absolutely thrilled and overjoyed. He's dancing in the streets with happiness because his son is now a Sholem. And in that sense, he has fulfilled his obligation as a parent vis-a-vis his child. But as far as the Acher is concerned, the Acher gets no benefit from the Tikkun Gavra. What would the Acher get benefit from if behind the curtain there was a different definition of Tikkun? Not Tikkun Gavra, but what? Tikkun Mitzvah. He says, as far as Tikkun Mitzvah is concerned, I'm not sure where I'm up to here, so I may be repeating what alright, that we read about it. Aval Acher, you might want to underline that line. Aval Acher Delo Ichpasle, he doesn't care. Right, that's an Aramaic phrase which they use even in modern Hebrew, Loch Patli, right? Betiko Natinok, he's not interested. And he doesn't benefit from the tikkun hagavra of the tinok. And then it's like the sugya in Perek HaBoneh. Okay, now we're going to skip this line and a half for just a moment because I want to get back to it, but it's complicated. And now he's saying that If Rashi would have, that this is the main point here, if Rashi would have accepted tikkun mitzvah, the mitzvah itself makes it into a meleches chovel of tikkun, then there would be no difference between the av and the acher, because even the acher gets benefit from the fact that he's implementing the mitzvah. In fact, the acher is going to make the bracha. What shlichus means is when I appoint you to do the mitzvah on my behalf, then you actually pick up that mitzvah. You become, so to speak, a bar chiyuva, and therefore you make the bracha on it. But that's only if I would upgrade and validate the tikkun as a of mitzvah. Then in Chinami, the answer to Rabbi Eliezer Halevi's question would have been that there's no difference between the av doing implementing the milah and acher and anyone else. Because to the same extent that it becomes a meleches tikkun for the father, it becomes a meleches tikkun for the acher, because in both cases they're motivated to benefit by the kiyum mitzvah. Each one gets points, gets brownie points for the mitzvah of milah, whether it's the father or the son. But if it's some sort of benefit in terms of the status change of the child, that's a unique responsibility and a benefit for the father, and it doesn't apply to the son.
So my question is, I think I asked yesterday, but from a different perspective, the shlich told Shabbatam Kamoto that the shlich was like the one who sent him, would only work from the status of a mitzvah, but not from tikkun gavra. Yes, the mohel will get the mitzvah because he's like the one who sent him, but the tikkun gavra is only the father and not the mohel.
It means that benefits from the status change of the child have nothing to do with acher. Those are side benefits. That makes sense if you're talking about the father. Where the acher comes into the picture is when you talk about mitzvah. He can share and participate in the mitzvah that's fundamentally, primarily incumbent upon the father. And insofar as he shares that mitzvah, he definitely gets a tikkun from the mitzvah perspective. But Rashi, as we said over and over again, rejects this concept of tikkun of mitzvah in order to convert and upgrade the melacha from a meleches chovel of mekalkel to a meleches tikkun. It's not enough to say that there's a mitzvah. Mitzvah doesn't register on the Richter scale for some reason. But the tikkun here is the tikkun gavra. Herein lies the difference that Rabbi Lezer Alevi wants to make between the av and the acher. The av has interests and benefits from the status change of his son. His status, you know, the status of his son has been upgraded. And that's called a responsibility of tikkun gavra. He, the father, has a responsibility to make sure that there's a tikkun gavra. That's why, by the way, the father cannot eat from the Korban Pesach until he makes sure that his son is mahul. Fascinating halacha. The child is an RL, and yet the father can't eat from the Korban Pesach. But where did Rashi see this distinction between the kavana of a person who gets benefit and someone else who's not directly benefiting from it? That's the line that we skipped from Perek HaBone. So let's go back to that line. The case in Perek HaBone is called Tolesh Asavin. Okay, let me write that down. Tolesh Asavin. And this is on page Kuf Gimel. Tolesh Asav. And basically what happens is that Asavim.
Asavim.
Yeah, sorry. And that means that he is removing certain weeds from the field. And there are two kavanos over here, so to speak. There are two intentions. One is, he needs these asavim, he'll use them for a bonfire, whatever he's using it for. And number two, as a result of removing these weeds from the ground, from the field itself is improved. And any improvement of a field is called meleches chorish. So the Gemara says that he doesn't have kavana in this particular circumstance to improve his land. What motivated him to remove the asavim was the fact that he needs the asavim. And therefore he doesn't violate the molacha of harisha. He's not miskaven, he doesn't have kavanah for harisha. So the Gemara asks, what do you mean he doesn't have kavana for harisha? He's improving the ground, and that's called a psik resha. There's no question in anyone's mind that when he removes these weeds, the ground is more fertile, and he's improved the ground. So that's called a psik resha. How can he claim, well, I didn't have kavana for this, my interest was to remove the asavim? So the Gemara says that which the Mishnah permitted, taking these asavim, that was bi'ara dechavre. You see those two words here? If you're going up four lines before the end of page one, the last word in the line is ara dechavre. The word dechavre is the first of the three lines up from the bottom. And the Gemara says that it wasn't Reuven, the owner of the field, who was plucking out these weeds. Rather, it was Shimon, his neighbor. And Shimon doesn't get any direct benefit from the improvement in the karka, in the ground, because he doesn't own the ground. He who owns the ground gets a kavana, gets a benefit from improving the ground. But he who doesn't own the ground, he cannot be considered miskaven, meaning he doesn't have that intention that was meant to be generated by psik resha to improve the ground. That distinction between the owner of the field, who's not allowed to pluck these weeds out on Shabbos, and anyone else, is what led Rabbi Lezer Alevi to the conclusion that in Mila there's a difference between the father implementing the Mila and someone else implementing the Mila. Just like in the case of Tolei Shasavim, the Gemara establishes that there's a difference between him and Acher. He gets benefit because it's his field and it improves the field. But someone else does not get that benefit, and therefore the psik resha doesn't bother me anymore, and I can call it Eneinu Miskaven, he doesn't have kavana. Same thing here. When he's doing Meleches Chovel in the case of Mila, if he's the father, then he gets benefit from the Tikkun Gavra. And lest he claim, well, I didn't have kavana for Tikkun Gavra, well, there's a psik resha. We know that the Tikkun Gavra is an absolute predictable, a definite result of the Mila. So you definitely have a psik resha that you're going to have a tikkun here, a tikkun gavra from this Mila. But then you could say, well, okay, psik resha, you're definitely going to have this, but am I benefiting from it? So the answer is depends. If you're the father of the child, you're going to have benefit from it, because you have motivations and you fulfill your responsibility vis-a-vis the child by achieving the tikkun gavra. But if you're Acher, then that's like the case in Perek HaBona, in Daf Kuf Gimel, where I don't have any vested interest or any benefit in improving your land. It's not my land. That sounds like a song. It's not my land. Oh, anyway. But in fact, if it's not my land, therefore it's not a miskaven. Again, the whole purpose of, who remembers? The whole purpose of psik resha, here's what we should have a choir, is to convert an eino miskaven into what? Into a miskaven. But there's a limitation rule. When do we say that psik resha effectively makes him into a miskaven? That's only if he gets benefit from it. Like in the case where he's plucking out these weeds and he wants to make a bonfire out of the weeds, or whatever it might be that he does with the weeds. But inadvertently, he's also, without kavana, improving the land. Well, psik resha tells me, you can't tell me that you didn't have kavana. You knew it was going to happen. If you knew it was going to happen, you had kavana for it. Don't fool yourself. Deluding yourself. But that's only, says the Gemara, bi'ara d'day in his own land. Then psik resha converts an eino miskaven into miskaven. But if it's ara d'chavre, and he has no vested interest in improving the land, it's not his land, in such a case, we completely neutralize the psik resha. We go back to Dover Shein HaMiskaven, and therefore it's mutter. Says the Trumas Adeshin, that's exactly what went on in Rabbi Lezer Alevi. That when and who gets benefit from Tikkun Gavra, that's only the Av. But the Acher doesn't get benefit from Tikkun Gavra. He's like Ara de Chavre. Had it been Tikkun Mitzvah, then Enochinam, there would be no difference between the father and the Acher. Let's go on three lines up from the bottom of the page. Omnomatosvis pligi hasam arashi. Tosvis disagrees with Rashi. Bahi de bishop psilo lavoras bas kohen. Tosfos asks the question, how can you tell me that the reason why, that's the way Rashi learns, you are enjoined from implementing the death penalty of Sreifa on Shabbos is because of Bishul Psila? It can't be. It's got to be because of Tikkun Mitzvah. If it's going to be because of Bishul Psila, the way Rashi learns it, converting the lead into molten lead, then what's the deal with the three other methods of Mises Bezdin? There is no Bishul Psila. You know, you have Hereg, and you have Chenek, and you have Skila. I mean, in those cases, there's no Bishul Psila, and yet those are prohibited on Shabbos as well. The answer is because it's a mitzvah incumbent upon Beis Din to implement the death penalty. So Tosfos says that in the case of Havaras, of Havaras Bas Kohen, of Sreifas Bas Kohen, in the case of Bishul Psila, what really generates the tikkun is tikkun mitzvah. And therefore, in the case of Milah, what generates the tikkun is tikkun mitzvah. Again, Tosfos is going to have to deal with the text of the Gemara. The Gemara doesn't mention a word about tikkun mitzvah. Well, in the case of Milah, it says tikkun, so Tosfos just has to fit. Tikkun Milah means tikkun mitzvah Milah. But in the case of Bas Kohen, the Torah says, the Gemara says it's Bishul Psila. How do you fit tikkun mitzvah into that? But apparently, the whole process is going to lead up to the Kiyum HaMitzvah, and that's what the Gemara had in mind, or the way the Rashba says it, that the Gemara wanted to give an extra reason in the case of Sreifas Bas Kohen. But be that as it may, what's common to all four methods of Mises Bezdin is that each one of them, and all of them together, are a Kiyum HaMitzvah. That's what makes the tikkun into a tikkun. Now we can turn to the second side. Ulefiz and Nireh. Therefore, in the context of this presentation, it would appear to me, says the Truma Sadesha, Duhu Adin Leinyan Chabura de Mila Lo Choshiv Mekalkel. Why is it that drawing blood in Mila is not a kilkel, but rather a tikkun mishum mitzvahs Mila? Just the same way Tosfos applies mitzvahs. Mises Bezdin makes it into a tikkun in the case of burning. So too, in the case of Mila, the mitzvah of Mila makes it into the burning. Now, what's going to come out now according to Tosfos? The way he explains Tosfos that what's behind the curtain in the make of tikkun let's make a deal is the mitzvah. Then what comes out now?
And there's no difference between
the father and the achir. In other words, basically, if we want to summarize the whole presentation of the Trumas Hadeshen, the answer to the question of the Shoel as to who should interpret the Mila would depend upon a machlokas Rashi and Tosfos in our Sugyan Kufaf. Let's go over it again. According to Rashi, there's no such thing as tikkun mitzvah. Forget about tikkun mitzvah. What makes the melechas chovel into a tikkun? The answer is tikkun gavra. Now we can make a distinction between the psik reisha of the father implementing the mila and the psik reisha of acher. In the case of the father, the psik reisha makes him into a kavana. We have a serious problem if the father implements the mila on Shabbos, and if he cuts a little bit too much, the extra otzas dam is meleches kilkul, and I'm sorry, is meleches chovel, chavola, and there's a miskaven here because he definitely was interested in tikkun gavra. On the other hand, as far as someone else is concerned, he's not interested in tikkun gavra. So therefore, the distinction of Rabbi Eliezer Alevi makes absolutely sense in the context of Rashi that the tikkun of mila is tikkun gavra. But if, says the Truma Sadesh, and I accept Tosis's view, then what's the tikkun of mila? What makes me into an upgrade into a meleches tikkun? It's the mitzvah. Then there's no difference between the av and the acher, and therefore we would reject Rabbi Eliezer Levi.
But they'd both be in trouble if they cut more than they needed to.
Correct. And the question is, what do we do in such a case? The Torah says that you have to circumcise the child. And that means that the Torah is saying that you have to overlook the problem that might exist. You know, Zeinu Chinami, you have to be super careful, and we have to warn the Moel, or the father who's ever doing the Mila, not to do this. But again, there's absolutely no difference between the father and the Acher. Why? Because in both cases, it's a Meleches Tikkun, insofar as it's a Kiyum Mitzvah of Mila. He says that if you look in Tosfos in Perka Orei, Tosfos says that according to Rabbi Shimon, even in Meleches Kilkul, there would be a violation of Chovel, because Chovel in Kilkul, according to Rabbi Shimon, is Chayev. So you don't have to introduce Tikkun at all. In Cain, therefore, Mashakosav, Maishna Av, Maishna Acher. Okay, you see that Mem Shin means Maishna. It does make a difference whether it's the father or it's the Acher. The Chavayim in both cases is Psik Rachel, Inyan Chabura. He's going to definitely make a Chabura. And if he goes too far, he's violating Shabbos Melechas Chabura. You'll tell me that it's a Melechas Kilkul. It doesn't matter whether it's Kilkul or Tikkun, because if we're going with Reb Shimon, then Reb Shimon holds that Yechai for Melechas Chovel, even in the case of Kilkul. And there's no difference between the two, because both are motivated L'shem Mitzvah. So at this point, what I would like to do, because I see we're running out of time, is just to summarize the following conclusion. He says, the Trumas Adeshen, that there are two traditions as far as the halacha of Mila B'Shabbos is concerned. One tradition, which is the tour, based on Rabbi Lezer HaLevi, that the father should not be, well, let's put it this way, the father should be discouraged from doing the Mila. We should give the Mila to the Acher. And there's another tradition in which we have no preference for an Acher, and we could allow the father himself to do the Mila. So as far as Rabbi Lezer HaLevi is concerned, that we prefer the father, the answer is because we're dealing with Tikkun Gavra. And if we're dealing with Tikkun Gavra, the way Rashi understands Rabbi Yehuda, then there's a fundamental difference between the psikresha of the father and the psikresha of his viliacher. With regard to the father, we have here a Dovra Miskavin, he benefits because he's motivated for the Tikkun Gavra. With regard to the Acher, he doesn't care about the Tikkun Gavra. Therefore, the Rebbe Lezer HaLevi prefers that the Acher implement the Mila. Now we have another tradition that says make no difference between the father and someone else. How do we understand that? So Trumas Adeshin says that we can understand that in one of two ways. Number one, because Tosfos says that the Tikkun in Mila is Mitzvah, and if there's Tikkun of Mitzvah, then again there's no difference between the Av and Acher. Either way, it's exactly identical. And then the Trumas Adeshin offers another suggestion, that L'halacha we paskin like Reb Shimon. And if we pass like Reb Shimon, then Chovel is Chayev even for Meleches Mekalkel. And once again, there's no difference therefore between the Av and the Acher. It doesn't matter one iota who's doing the Mila. So there are two ways of justifying that tradition, that minog, that custom, that let the father do the Mila on Shabbos. One way of justifying that tradition is by saying that we accept Tosfos, and therefore the Tikkun is Tikkun Mitzvah. And then there's no difference between the father and the Acher. The other way of saying it is, forget about that whole Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos. That Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos is within the framework of Rabbi Yehuda, who needs to convert Chovel into a Metakein. So Rashi says it's this Tikkun, Tikkun Gavra, and Tosfos says this Tikkun, Tikkun, Tikkun Mitzvah. Forget about all that. That's irrelevant. We Paschal like Rav Shimon. And if we Paschal like Rav Shimon, it means that Chovel is Chayev even if it's Meleches Mekalkel. And by the way, it makes a lot of sense that we should Paschal like Rav Shimon according to Rashi, because Rashi says that Rav Shimon's entire Shita about Chovel, I mean, maybe Chovel is Tzorachli Lekalbo, the answer is that's Tikkun Eitzel Acherim, and Rav Shimon is of the position that Malach Shein Tzvicha Legufa Patur, so therefore the Tikkun Eitzel Acherim is not going to convert it and upgrade it into a Meleches Tikkun, and therefore it's always going to be a Meleches Mekalkel by definition. And we passing like Rav Shimon and Malach Shein Tzvicha Legufa, except for the Rambam, of course, but all the other Rishonim except Rav Shimon, La Loch, Malach Shein Tzvicha Legufa, makes sense therefore that the Kula of Reb Shimon in Melach Shein Tzvich L'Gufa generates a chumrah in the case of Chovel, and in Chovel Yechayev, even if it's a Mekalkel, and once again, therefore, there's no difference between the Av and Acher. And the Trumas Hadeshin points out, again, for those of you who have Daf Kuf Vav in front of you, that is a very short Tosfos here. Dibra Maskel Di Omar. Do you see that Tosfos? It's on the same line in the printed Gemaras as Mali, which is at the end of that line. And Tosfos says that when Rav Ashi gives this whole explanation as to why the Torah prohibits Mila on Shabbos, except for a special head to Mila Bismana, and the Gemara explains in the name of Rav Ashi because there's a tikkun in Mila, Tosfos says, Lav mishum de sover ki Rav Yehuda. It's not that Rav Ashi was sweating and in order to come up with a definition of tikkun because he holds like Rav Yehuda. He was just giving an answer for Rav Yehuda. What does Tosfos sound like? Is he accepting Rav Yehuda? No, he's not accepting Rav Yehuda. He's saying that Rav Ashi only made this valiant effort to explain why Meleches Chovel and Mila is called a Tikkun based on the Tikkun Gavra. So that Rav Yehuda would be able to make sense, and that Meleches Chovel must be and always is a tikkun in order for it to qualify as a malacha. But Rav Ashi himself never accepted Rav Yehuda. The implication is that Tosfos has vested interest to make sure that we don't misunderstand and think that from this Gemara we should derive the conclusion that we paskin like Rav Yehuda and you're only chaya for chovel in a case of tikkun. That's not so. You'll ask me, so why did Rav Ashi bother with this whole thing? Rav Ashi was a Basra. He was from the last of the Amoraim. We always pass in Halacha like the last of the Amoraim. So if Rav Ashi is on the same page as Rav Yehuda, then we should be tempted to pass in like Rav Yehuda. And Meleches Chovel is only Chayav if it's a Tikkun. No! You're misleading us. Rav Ashi himself was only defending Rav Yehuda l'shitasa, but only to make sense as out of Rav Yehuda's shita. But he himself, Rav Ashi, thus he was involved in intellectual honesty, but he wasn't motivated to protect Rav Yehuda because he accepted Rav Yehuda. So the implication, says the Trumas Hadesh in the next paragraph of Tosfos here, is that we accept l'halacha the shita of Rav Shimon against Rav Yehuda, and once again that leads us to the conclusion that there's no difference between the father who's doing the mila and the son who's doing the mila. The only last point I want to add before I let you go is, if Rashi rejects the idea of tikkun gavra, I'm sorry, of tikkun mitzvah, thank you, of tikkun mitzvah, and that's why Rabbi Elazar HaLevi, according to the Trumas Hadeshen, makes a distinction between the father and the acher, because we don't accept tikkun mitzvah, what do we do with korea al-meso? The Gemara says in korea al-meso that that's called a kriya of tikkun. So for that, I need a Gemara on Daf Kuf Hey Amid Beis, which I don't have in front of me right this second.
I have the Gemara.
Yeah, if you have it, Kuf Hey Amid Beis. And let's see if I can find this. There's a Tosfos on Daf Kuf Hey Amid Beis. Dibra Maskel HaRav Yehuda, so please make a note of it. Again, I've given you a photocopy in the past of this omen, but we never pointed out a few key words in Tosfos here. Dibra Maskel Ha, which is the third Tosfos on the page. And he says, Dila Kamon Mashma, Dila Tzorech Mitzvah Lo Chashiv Tikkun, at least according to Reb Shimon. So what happened to tikkun mitzvah? So Tosfos says, if that be the case, why is kriya al meso chayav? Where's the tikkun here? L'chora kriya al meso is the tikkun. We have a theory here. Why? Because if you summarize the conclusion of the Gemara on Daf Kuf Hey Amid Beis as far as Rav Shimon is concerned, then you come to the conclusion that the Braisa of Rabbi Avo that stipulates that Korea al Meso is Chayav on Shabbos is because it was Mes Dideh, which means the Kiva Mitzvah of Kriya. How's that going to work out according to Rav Shimon? Because again, initially at least, the Gemara doesn't even introduce Rav Shimon. It means that even Rav Yehuda, both Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon would agree that Koreal Mesa on Shabbos, if it's Mesti day, is Chayav. Yet Rav Shimon here, in the case of Mila and Havoras Bas Kohen, is not willing to call it a Meleches Tikun. On the contrary, he derives from here Meleches Kilkul in the cases of Chovil of Mavi. So why is it that we can upgrade Kriyal Meso to the level of Tikun because of the mitzvah, and yet in both Mila and in Havoras Bas Kohen, Rav Shimon refuses to accept Tikun mitzvah, and it remains a Meleches Kilkul? So Tosus answers, Aval Gabi Kriya. Why does the Gemara say that Kriyal Meso is considered a Tikun? Havi Tikun Abeged. Tosus says that he's improving the Beged. Now that's paradoxical, right? You're ripping a garment and you're improving it. Because as a result of the fact that there was a kriya on the beged, Tosa says, the Avel, who's sitting shiva for one of his relatives, Rachman al-San, is allowed to wear that beged. The law is that mitzvah's kriya has two dimensions to it. What do you say, Harvey?
Permanently.
Well, I don't know about permanently, but during shiva he has to wear a beged karua, meaning there are two dinim in mitzvah's kriya. One is a kiyum of Maisa Kriya, and the other is a kiyum of wearing a beged karua. And from his perspective, the Ovil's perspective, the Kriya itself is a tikkun on the beged. Is Mimela, Rashi is right, that there is no such thing as tikkun mitzvah. Tosus would accept that according to Rav Shimon there's no tikkun mitzvah. Rav Shimon rejects tikkun mitzvah. That's because Rav Shimon holds some lakshan tzvich l'gufa. But Rav Yehuda would accept tikkun mitzvah. And that led us to the minhag that it doesn't matter whether it's the father who does the milah on Shabbos or the acher. But Rashi is of the opinion that even Rav Yehuda rejects tikkun mitzvah, because Rashi fundamentally maintains that tikkun mitzvah is not called a tikkun. Again, we're going to have to deal with the Gemara about Hadassim, where he's chayav for plucking off the berries, but Rashi holds that tikkun mitzvah is not a tikkun. Aye, what about the sugi of Kreyal Meso? Tosa says that's a tikkun on the beged, because now he can wear the beged, it's a beged karula. So Rabosai, for today, what I'd like you to do is see if you can review this discussion about the Trumas Hadeshen. And then you should have a little booklet here that has three pages to it. Am I right?
Yes.
So let's just go over what are those three pages. Number one, you should have a page that has the Gemara Chagiga.
The booklets are here.
Oh, wait a minute. Actually, I apologize. What I should have done before we stapled it was add the Gemara Chagiga. Svi, you photocopied yesterday the Gemara Chagiga, correct? Did everybody get a copy? So basically, Rabosai, after you finish the Trumas Hadeshen, which you call item number one here, we go on to item number two, which is the Gemara and Chagiga. Again, you should all have that photocopy, or if not, I have the Gemara and Chagiga here on my desk, you can photocopy it. And then after that, we're going to take a look at a tzlach. You should have a tzlach in Beitza. You remember the sugya of Kisi Adam that we spoke about at the beginning of Beitza? So one of the great commentaries on Masechta Beitza is called the Tzlach. That's the Tzion LeNefesh Chaya. It's fascinating. He named it after his mother. His mother's name was Chaya. Very rare that Sfarim have women's names to it. And this is the greatest mind of Ashkenazic Jewry of the last three centuries. He's not so famous for his Tzlach. He's more well known for another book that he authored called The Node of Yehuda. His name is Rabbi Yechezkel Landau, and I'm the proud owner of the original first edition of The Node of Yehuda, and it's great shape. He published it during his lifetime. I'm convinced that he had it in his hands. That's just my psychology. Then we get to item number, what number are we up to? We had Chagiga. Well, we had Trumas Hadeshen, Chagiga, the Tzlach. So we're up to item number four. That's a Gemara Ksubis on Daf Hey Amid Beis. And I apologize that the words Ksubis didn't come out. That's what happens when I try to steal Tzvi's job of photocopying. I mess up. But Ben was kind enough to write in the words Ksubis on the right side of the page. Okay, then? Do we have a packet for Harvey? He seems to be looking for his packet.
Packet right behind.
Okay, so Harvey, this is your packet. Write your name on it, your address, your Tudat Zehut. Now, what I want you to do on Ksubis, again, this may take us another day or two. Please take out a pen and underline the words Iboilahu. We're going to count down from the top of the page on Ksubis Daf Hayam and Beis. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 lines down from the top of the page. It's a few lines up above the Tosas Dibur Asil Dam. And there it says Iboilahu. You have that? Does everybody have Iboilahu? So I want you to underline that.
Yes.
Okay, and I want you to take that down and learn the Gemara for about 10 lines until you get to Ika Diamri. But you don't have to learn the Ika Diamri. We don't need that. The last word in the brackets should be HaPesach, if you find that.
What is that?
It's 10 lines below Iboilahu. You'll have to look for it, Harvey. But the most important thing on this page is, and if you could put an arrow, is Tosvis on the right side, next to the last Tosvis, Im Timtzi Lomar. Do you have that? So that is the most important thing I want you to get out of this page. What item number was that? That was item number 5? I don't remember anymore. Okay.
What was 4?
All right, so let's go over it again.
That was four.
So we're up to number 4. Right, so we have the Truma Sadeshen, Chagiga, Tzlach, and the Gemara and Ksubis. That's 4, correct? So now we're up to number 5, and we're looking at the Lechem Shamayim. Okay, the heavenly bread. And this was authored by Rav Yaakov Emden. I don't know if you ever heard of him. He lived almost 5 centuries ago. He's otherwise known as the Yaivitz. And he wrote a commentary on Mishnayos. We're looking on his the commentary of his Masechta Shabbos, the 22nd Perek, Mishnah Gimel, the third Mishnah. So it's 22:3. And if you want to make a little arrow there, you'll put an arrow against the word Mishnah. Well, actually, that doesn't help you much. The word Mishnah appears about 5 times on this page. Okay, sorry. So, you see on the top of the page, that's not what I want. It says Mishnah Gimel. Below that is Mishnah Beis. The third one that says Mishnah Gimel, Shover Adam Es Achavos. Now, if you want to get some background here, so you know where the Yaivitz is coming from, my recommendation is to use Kahati. And if anyone has a problem, I'll give them a little quick library tour. Here we have behind this wall something called Kahati, that's a commentary on the Mishnayos. So you just get a simple pshat in the Mishnah, so you'll know what the Lechem Shamayim is attaching his comment to a Mishnah. You should see, you know, the original Mishnah. And that's the case where you're allowed to break something for the sake of a mitzvah on Shabbos, which is going to raise the whole issue of mekalkel litzorich mitzvah. Are you allowed to do a meleches kilkel on Shabbos for the sake of the mitzvah? That's the subject of this piece in the Yaivitz, in the Lechem Shamayim. So we have five pages. And anyone who tells me he finished this by 11 o'clock today, I'm going to just tell him he's not telling the truth. Because there's no way that you could do that in an hour. Okay then?
This is a mission.